In a world where slow-footed, pre-lockout, one-dimensional defensemen are supposedly a thing of the past, comes the bane of all Maple Leafs fans today. Roman Polak is the unwanted one.
Okay, boys. Last minute of play. Empty net. Let's go. We got Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Marleau, Riley on the point, and of course Polak on the other point. We want every puck going through Polak. We want your big bomb taking these shots. Let's go.
He makes $1.1 million, which is probably $1 million too much, and has the hockey IQ of a young Ty Domi, an over-the-hill David Clarkson, and a bitter Shane Corson.
Help, help! There's a cat stuck in that tree, and it's on fire! I need someone tall and lumbering to help me get that cat out of the tree. And preferably from the Czech Republic.
I am Roman Polak. I am here to help.
Never mind. You know what? I see Martin Marincin over there.
His value to the team may seem dubious at best, but his reputation around the league and with other general managers will leave you breathless and brimming with indigestion. Lou Lamorello speaking.
Lou, Mark Bergevin here. Listen, you've got the key to help me turn my team around. You know who he is. I want him. Roman Polak, what do you want from
him? He's not just your sixth defenseman, he's also your penalty killer, your favorite whipping boy, marginally better than Martin Marincin, and the main reason why your team is shorthanded with less than 5 minutes left in the game. Roman Polak is the unwanted one.
Not to be confused with Brad Marsh, Carl Pielash, or the ghost of Tim Horton.
So I just checked my calendar, and I'm wondering how in holy hell in 2018 we're still talking about Roman Polak. Did he, like, throw himself into a time machine? Where am I? What is this?
It could very well be time machine, but it's more being defensively responsible and a coach's favorite.
That's terrible. That makes no sense, because you and I are watching the same product on the ice. And you're texting me and you're calling me and you're annoying me and aggravating me with reminders of how my so-called great team, which is supposed to be evolving, needs to rely on Roman Polak while it sits Travis Dermott. Bizarro land.
I don't know what it is. It seems like the old school coaches, Claude Julien's, the Mike Babcocks, they like their old reliable warriors. And that's the, I mean, that seems to be the case a lot in Montreal as well with the Alzners and Jordy Benz of the world.
Sure, but these warriors that we talk about, for some reason when I hear the word warrior, I'm like romanticizing it in my head, and I think of like a really cool veteran that may have lost a step and can still do cool things like Ron Hainsey does. You know, Ron Hainsey, when he's on the ice, he's playing shorthanded, and that's what he does well. If he does anything outside of that, it's a disaster. But what on earth does Roman Polak even do anymore that would warrant you in a so-called developing year of your great Stanley Cup plan? You can tell I'm really bitter about this. I don't know what it is, but for some reason, after I did that sketch, my opinion of Roman Polak somehow got even worse.
You know what? I mean, what I heard about Roman Polak is that he keeps his teammates honest. He finishes his checks, so that allows the Leafs to stop the cycle. But other than that, yeah, I agree. I mean, it's the NHL has only gotten faster, and Roman Polak has only gotten slower, so I'm not sure how exactly he continues to fit in with your Toronto Maple Leafs.
And there's no evidence to show that he's trending in the right direction. In fact, you could argue that from the moment... Look, it was an inspirational story. I got it. Gruesome injury last year. Good character team guy. Bring him back. Can't hurt, right? He's going to help your team. Everyone's going to be in a great mood. Look, it's old Uncle Polak from the Czech Republic. You know, that guy who in 2004 was really great and did some cool things as a defensive defenseman. But now I think he's just hurting the team. If you look back at the last 2.5 weeks, pretty much from the start of that Vegas game in the turn of the year, Leafs have been terrible. They have not been winning games consistently, and the games they're losing are the direct result of silly mistakes usually caused by slow-plodding Roman Polak and his back check of doom.
Well, that's interesting that you say that, because the last game against the Ottawa Senators, a young Morgan Rielly decided to pinch at a very inopportune time, and the guy you just praised, Ron Hainsey, on the oncoming 3-on-1, you know what you're supposed to do when you're on an odd man rush and you're the defender? Take away the pass. Hockey 101 basics. What did Ron Hainsey do? He went to the puck carrier, thus opening up the dangerous Tommy Pyatt, allowing him to go over the blocker of Freddie Anderson.
Sure, mistakes happen, and that's fine. I have no problem with Morgan Rielly in back-to-back games costing the Leafs a combined 3 points. Whatever. You know what? That's something I'm willing to put up with. Why? Because he's going to finish with 55 points. I'm just bitter because Roman Polak is nothing more than that last oil change that you're making before you get a new car. Like, you're just doing it because it'll help things keep running, but, you know, he's got, I read a statistic that I think he's got 15 minors in his last 27 games played, or now 16 in his last 28. Those are terrifying numbers. Anyways, let's not belabor this. I don't want to make it seem like this is Habs fan versus Leafs fan, the Roman Polak character assassination edition. Exactly. It bothers me. It bothers me because it doesn't need to happen.
One more thing about Roman Polak is apparently the reason why Dermott isn't playing as much is because he shoots the other way. And you're going to have to correct me whether he's a right or a left, but whichever way he shoots is the wrong way because the Leafs have too many of that-handed defensemen. And Babcock, you know how he likes right-handed defensemen playing on the right-hand side and left-handed defensemen playing on the left side. And Dermott doesn't fit that formula. Meanwhile, Polak does. So that's one of the reasons why you're seeing Polak over a young defender.
What a terrifying irony that that explanation involved you having to, like, politically step over what you really should have been saying. My organization has no left-handed puck-moving defenseman. Polak might be a righty, and Babcock may have some kind of weird arcane system for how he lines up left versus right-handed shooting defensemen, but you've got to admit how embarrassing it is for you to peer over the pond out of Montreal and realize the vast riches of left-handed puck-moving defensemen that we have. We should trade. We should make a trade right now. You and I should sit down, make a trade, and mail it to both Lou Lamoriello and Mark Bergevin and tell them, here are your resources. You need Roman Polak. We need Carl Alzner.
Listen, Montreal will never, ever make a trade within their own division.
Never.
Unless,
never.
Oh wait a minute. Unless it involves a French left winger who they want to move to the center position. Never mind.
How disastrous is that? Are there not moments where you're walking about in your day and saying to yourself, I cannot believe we traded with a team that might even win the Stanley Cup this year? I mean, the Lightning are so good. And Kucherov, I just want to say Kucherov over and over again. So good. Don't talk about him. Shh, he's a Russian.
Yeah.
You don't have to talk about how great he is. Let's talk about Sid the Kid.
I mean, there are so many things wrong with the trade. And I understand that it's early. And I understand he's young. But again, I just don't understand how you can trade a left-handed puck-moving defenseman, your number one prospect, to a division rival to fulfill a position that he doesn't play and actually plays a position where you already had two left-wingers in Galchenyuk and Pacioretty. So you're deep on the left-wing, you get another left-winger in Drouin, and it's completely mind-boggling. I'm literally like rubbing the temples on my forehead because it's so confusing. It's so mind-boggling that someone would allow this trade to happen. It's ridiculous.
Right, and it is ridiculous, except we know that being in Montreal, that's where ridiculous things happen. That's how things are rationalized. And for the longest time, your franchise, I think, enjoyed the benefit of the doubt on these hockey moves in the past, right? They'd make a move and it'd be like, would other GMs do that? Probably not, because it's Montreal and there's this great history. I think the older fans are like now realizing more than ever how much peril there is, how much they're in trouble moving forward unless they start making better, sound, practical decisions. You'd agree, we're well beyond arguing whether or not there was any practicality with his last four or five moves. There aren't. You're looking at it now. You're looking at Weber for Subban. You're looking at Sergachev being let go to get Drouin. And now you're looking at what's happening with the contract for Carey Price. And you're saying to yourself, what on earth's happening? Where are we going?
Yeah, it's it's not good. I mean, Mark Bergevin, he had that big press conference on Sunday, and a lot of people commented how the bravado and the confidence was clearly not the same as it was in his previous press conferences, because he knows, and he admitted, he's made mistakes. And for him to go up there and admit that he's made mistakes with a team sitting in third, fourth, last place, the same position that they were in when he inherited the team, is a stunning indictment of the job he's done. It's terrible. Meanwhile, people are still saying that he's probably going to stay on as general manager of the Montreal Canadiens. And that, again, is just, again, it's mind-boggling. The franchise needs to change their philosophies, as I've mentioned before. Changing the GM without changing their philosophies won't really do that much.
How James Van Riemsdyk, with his 19 goals on pace for potentially 40 this year, not only have they not signed him to any kind of extension or decided to bring him back, but it seems clear that we don't even know if they have any intention of using him as trade bait. At this stage, what's happening? Why are they free-rolling and letting him go into the deadline without any indication of what they plan to do? Wouldn't you have expected by now they'd tell the fans, you know what, we actually need this guy, he's an important veteran with good depth? Or is that an indictment of just how soft he is? Because he is Softy McSofterton, like he's Dairy Queen ice cream out there.
Oh, yeah.
He might be able to score and do fancy moves, but at the end of the day, you go into the corner of James Van Riemsdyk, he's the one walking out with a black eye.
He's the one coming out with the uncracked eggs in his pocket.
Jeez, the metaphors alone, like the double entendre of that was brilliant. I applaud you enormously.
Well, with James Van Riemsdyk, it is quite perplexing as to why he hasn't been signed yet or re-signed, and I don't think they have plans for him. The Leafs are deep. The Leafs are deep in the area of offense, as they call it, and he will probably be used as you can't let him walk. So I believe he will be traded before the deadline. And it's funny because I don't hear a lot of talk about him being available at the trade deadline. I hear a lot of talk about, you know, the James Neals of the world, the David Perrons, the Max Pacioretty's, Thomas Plekanec. You know, those guys, you know, some on expiring contracts. But JVR on a expiring contract isn't really isn't a really popular name that we're hearing as a potential trade bait.
Well, I'll tell you what we are going to hear right now are from our three affiliates. We've got all three of them on this show, which I think is remarkable. It's like a lunar and a solar eclipse, because we're going to talk to Omar White, and then we're going to hear from James Tanner, and then from Baltimore, Dave Stevenson. And they've all got some pretty interesting things to say about the Maple Leafs and Habs, don't they?
They certainly do, yeah. Omar's going to take us with what's the latest going on with the Habs, Tanner, latest on the Leafs, and Baltimore, Davey, the latest around the NHL.
And because it is a bye week for my team and your team is kind of ramping up again, I will make sure to call you as often as possible and talk to you about baseball, your favorite pastime during the middle of the hockey season.
Oh, God, yeah. Looking forward to that.
It seems like you are. You can show a little bit more enthusiasm. Josh Donaldson just got 1 year.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. 5 o'clock on Primetime Sports, leading off the show, the round table, was baseball talk. What a joke. You got the Raptors sitting at 30-10, the Maple Leafs doing what they're doing, and then you and your baseball cronies talking about Josh Donaldson.
See, I'm beginning to think that we really can't have it both ways as fans. I don't think you can make the case that you can live with mistakes made by young defensemen or young players, and also say that you can live with bad decisions being made by veterans and players that really have no business being in your lineup. And that's exactly the trouble that the Toronto Maple Leafs are facing right now. They have that horrible, horrible synergy of really, really bad decisions emanating from just about everyone on their blue line, and it's cost them an awful lot of points. Now, you could easily argue, well, in a year where you pretty much guaranteed making it into the playoffs halfway through the season, even though there is no real assurance of that in Toronto Maple Leafs land, we have to keep things in perspective that Mike Babcock is trying to build a long-term picture. And I know that might seem really frustrating for people who want things to happen literally tomorrow, i.e. the Leafs lift the cup in April, but that's just not going to happen this year. I think it's much more worthwhile for us to put in the time and effort to simply pay close attention to what these decisions are and know that at the end of the day, cross your fingers and hope they're being made for good fan value. Why? Because I think it's being ignored. At the end of the day, we as fans want an entertaining product on the ice. And when you're not winning because players are repeating the same mistakes over, that's where you hope that your incredibly wealthy long-term coach has the savvy and foresight to know when it's time to make the decision to bring in new, fresh blood.
I want the Montreal Canadiens to lose more games than they win. There, I said it. The final 40 games of the regular season, and I want them to lose more of them. There. That feels good to say that. You know why? Because I just want some direction. I just want some direction on where the Montreal Canadiens are heading. And I know that just finishing barely out of the playoffs does the Montreal Canadiens no good to resetting, retooling, or rebuilding this team, whatever phrase you want to use. It'll also do Montreal no good if they just get into the playoffs and play a top team. Let's face it, Montreal can't win a series against any of the other top seven teams if they finish in the eighth seed. They'll be eliminated in four or five games and won't get a great draft pick. Yes, the draft lottery doesn't guarantee that you'll pick first or close to the top, but you have to make sure that your odds are as high as possible that you can get that top pick or close to the top. Because, as everyone knows, you build through the draft. Mark Bergevin has said, you build through the draft. And he's complained that, you know what, I can't build through the draft because I'm always picking in the 20s. Well, here's your chance to build your team by picking high in the draft. Take that chance. And people are saying, well, how are you going to do that? You've got Carey Price in net. You're going to win a lot more games because Carey Price looks like Carey Price again. Well, unfortunately, you got to take down the team in front of Carey Price. That will also help him win. You got to trade some veterans away for prospects and picks. And you know what? That indirectly will also help your team because that'll give some time and development to the younger players that are on Laval. So let's get a clear direction on where this team is going. Let's use the T word. Let's tank. I want this direction to be clear, and I'm pretty sure that direction should be south.
Leading off our illustrious list of guests for this episode of Habs Fan vs. Leafs Fan is none other than the site expert of Editor and Leaf, James Tanner. James, thanks for taking the time to drop in here on HVL.
Hey, thanks for having me.
In looking at the last two games in particular against Columbus and the Ottawa Senators, can we both agree that there's got to be some legitimate concerns if you're a Maple Leafs fan when it comes to holding a lead or keeping yourself in a game? What's up? Why is this team struggling with mental mistakes that have come back to haunt them over the last little while?
I don't know. Like, it's slightly concerning, but at the same time, you look at the team, you go, they're going to play Boston, right? 40 games from now?
Mm-hmm.
They're coming into a break. Can you be too concerned with a couple games before a big break?
Are you concerned that if you had to be worried about something, is it a question of whether or not Mike Babcock's coaching style is rubbing people the wrong way, or is it just a case of young players making young mistakes?
Both, maybe. It's Toronto. It doesn't matter who the coach is. Everything that they do is under a microscope, right? So we're going to look at every tiny little thing. You know, I don't mind. I criticize the coach all the time. I think there's lots of things he could do different. But also, you got to remember, he's got a long-term plan. He's the only coach who's never getting fired. And he's got a long-term plan, and he doesn't really share it with anybody. So maybe his lack of forthcoming answers makes people, you know, people criticize, and then he doesn't really give them answers, and then people don't, you know, ask him questions because they know he's not going to answer them anyways. And then it's just like, you know, they lose a couple games. They're not doing as good as they should be probably. But, you know, how mad can we get?
That's a great question. How angry should a fan get is what it's all about. Here we are halfway through the season. The team is firmly entrenched in a playoff position. Maybe it's a question of realistic expectations. When you looked at this year, what were your expectations as a Leafs expert? Were you thinking to yourself, this is the year that they do extraordinary things, maybe some unrealistic things? Or was this more of a year where they just gradually continue building themselves to the point where mistakes will happen, but people's expectations need to be tempered? Rome wasn't built in a day, right?
Yeah, I don't know. My expectations were huge coming into the year, I think. They got an awesome team. They got lots of fun kids. And they got some cap room and some tradable guys. They got the three, Nylander, Matthews, Marner. Last year, they're all on entry-level contracts. So my expectations are huge. This is a year where you can have JVR on your third line. That's a luxury. You're not going to be able to do that, right?
So true. So true.
How many more good years does, like, Bozak or Komarov have, or, you know, Kadri's in his prime, Gardner's in his prime? It's a good year to go for it. Like, my expectations are super high. I think the Leafs could easily be one of the best teams in the league, given their roster, the players that they could add to the roster just internally, the fact that they could easily pick some guys up. I expect them, I think that they should be a legitimate contender. Even now, even after it's not been good for like a month or two.
So that being said, does it frustrate you to see too much Roman Polak, too much Connor Carrick? Are you surprised that there's been recent criticism related to the fact that Travis Dermott has shown the potential to be an NHL player, yet was scratched in the Battle of Ontario? Is it too much to create criticism for micromanaging this team? Or should
no,
you be saying
no,
to yourself,
it's
all part of the Mike Babcock plan? He knows what he's doing. He's the one who's untouchable, and the one who's here for the long haul.
I think you should say to yourself that it's fun to watch hockey, and it's awesome that we get to talk about it and care about it. Like, you know, it's a big deal. So if you think Polak sucks, you should say Polak sucks. And if you're mad at Babcock, then say so. And I mean, like, generally speaking, it's fun to talk about. Like, you know, the coach is doing something that I think is stupid. I'm glad to talk about it. Like, I wouldn't play Roman Polak. Like, especially when you look at things like the Leafs are, like, the fourth worst team in the NHL for allowing shots per game, and Polak's like the second worst player for allowing shots per game. So it just seems like two obvious things that you could easily fix. It's like, well, that's a problem. Remove the worst defender. So there's like legitimate things that you could be mad about or upset. But at the same time, like, you're asking me, like, how mad should we get? Just, you know what I'm saying, though? Enjoy it. Talk about, you know, it's a good thing to talk about. But in the big picture, like, Matthews is 21. Marner hasn't even, like, scratched the surface of his potential. The team is awesome. Like, how mad can you get, like, on a day-to-day basis if they're playing pull-off? Like,
now, we ran a poll recently here at HVL looking at some of the most disappointing teams this year in the NHL. And not surprisingly, the Edmonton Oilers are winning it hands down. But I'm wondering, how do you view teams like the Senators and the Canadiens and the Sabres when it comes to wretched, frustrated fan bases that clearly are having a hard time coming to grips with the expectations of their team? How do you relate to something like that coming from a Toronto perspective?
You're just glad it's finally not you? Like, I don't know. It sucks. But, like, if you're a Leaf fan, you know, like, you haven't really enjoyed the fun of victory ever. Like, the last time the Leafs won the Stanley Cup, goalies didn't wear masks. Like, their winning goalie didn't wear a mask.
There's
they haven't won a cup since we wore masks. Like, think about that. So, like, if another team sucks, I don't really care. Like, we had our turn, you know?
James, as always, you are a true straight shooter, and it's a thrill for us to have you as one of our affiliates. His name is James Tanner, and he is the man who runs Editor and Leaf. Thanks for joining me here on Habs Fan versus Leaf.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Ari. I really appreciate you having me on, and we'll catch you next time. I appreciate it.
You know, Kamal, it's funny. When I think of what makes a Habs fan versus Leafs fan episode complete, I can't think of anything that doesn't include our next guest, Omar White, the site expert and winning habit. Omar, thanks for joining us here on HVL.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to be on, so you don't have to thank me. I'm always willing to come on and talk some hockey with you guys.
No, I'm just going to make an automatic sound cue or something. Thank you for being a friend. What is that, Golden Girls?
yeah, it is.
And we're going to cut right there. Omar, listen, I had a chance to check out A Winning Habit recently right after the break, and you've got a great article right now about Carey Price and his all-star selection, which I think he shouldn't really surprise anyone with the way he's played. But I want to get your thoughts on whether or not a typical Habs fan, if you will, can take some solace in the fact that you still have the greatest goaltender in the known galaxy.
Yeah, honestly, I think what's interesting about having Carey Price on the team is that, you know, one, a lot of Habs fans kind of think that the way he was playing in the beginning of the season is, I guess, partly responsible to where they are now. It is and it isn't. Overall, it's just the state of the whole team and how they're playing and how they're set up and all that stuff. But, you know, at the end of the day, going to sleep and waking up knowing that you have the best goaltender in the world in the organization is always a positive thing. And that if by any hope or any optimistic belief that when Mark Bergevin said the press conference is going to happen and that the Habs, you know, could still make a playoff push is going to be, you know, based on how Carey Price plays. And, you know, ever since he came back from his injury, he's had a whole boatload of, you know, highlight reel saves. And, you know, and even though the Habs have been losing, you know, more often than not, you know, he still kept them in it. They haven't necessarily been blown out. They've been maybe like one or two goal game losses. So, you know, it's you know, Carey Price, you know, that's the one player in your organization that's going to keep you from, you know, from actually fully rebuilding. And, you know, and I think the reason why a lot of Habs fans are at least the ones who have given up on this season are committed to more of a retool is because you still have Carey Price now and for the next 8 years.
Omar, it's great that you touch on that point because there's a lot of people in Habs Nation who are kind of not liking the fact that Carey Price is back to being the Carey Price that we all know. And that's because he will be able to keep them in games, will be able to steal games, and thus will prevent Montreal from being a bottom team and getting that coveted draft lottery pick. What are your feelings on the idea that maybe Montreal shouldn't be using Carey Price as much as they do?
Well, I think the one thing I can say is that even though the Habs have won their last two games, even though Carey Price has been playing as well as he has, the team was still losing. So I still think that even if, you know, Carey Price continues to play on this standard, that, you know, the way the team plays with the puck, without the puck, it's not really going to be, I guess, enough to warrant any type of late season push again, regardless of what Bergevin or the rest of management thinks. The team just isn't that good enough to go on some Cinderella run like the Ottawa Senators did like three years ago, I think it was. I think what they won like 22 of their last 25 games, something like that. I don't know, but I don't know. I think this that. Regardless of how Carey Price plays, I think the team still isn't that good enough to go on a deep run. And, you know, and I do believe that after the bye week is over, considering that they're going to face the Boston Bruins three times, and I think in 8 days or something like that, I think at least after the second Boston game, then you're going to have a clear, like, I guess, motive or direction of what you have to do for the rest of the season. Like, you got, like, I have to tell you, if the Habs lose all three of those games against Boston, it's done. I personally, I think it's over with now. I think they should just pull the chute, finish as low as possible. And, you know, even though obviously it's no guarantee, it's a lottery, you know what I mean? And you're not always going to have a team finish in 30th like the Leafs and then get Austin Matthews. You know, there'll be years where you'll finish last, but then you'll end up drafting fourth, or a year where you'll finish like 12th last, I think. I think that's where Philly was last year, and they bumped up to second. Stuff like that. So you'll have those years and all that stuff. But I guess is my thought process is that if you can better your chances of getting the best pick available in an organization in the system that doesn't really scream superstar talent outside of the NHL, then I think you should do whatever you can to get to that point. So, you know, as much as Habs fans are probably frustrated in how well Carey Price is playing, I don't think, you know, regardless of how he's playing, I don't think he's going to warrant any late season push that will get them anywhere outside of the bottom 10. Yeah.
So Omar, you can find some of your great work, of course, at www.awinninghabit.com. And another article that I couldn't help but notice that falls in line with the concerns that Habs fans have when it comes to the direction they're moving forward is some of this fire that was caused from additional fuel to the flame, if you will, from Alex Kovalev, who was asked his thoughts about what's wrong with
the current state of the Montreal Canadiens. And of course, you quoted him as saying that he himself questioned some of these decisions as being French-oriented or culturally centric decisions. Do you think that's a bit of a low blow? And do you think that the team has to be concerned from a PR perspective that if former players now are complaining about this leadership group, how long before fans just outright revolt and say enough is enough?
Well, to be honest with you, Ari, I think fans are actually starting to smell the tea leaves already. Like you'll see the odd tweet here and there of a Habs fan saying, you know, one of their problems is that instead of looking necessarily for the best person available for a certain position, that they'll kind of have a leniency towards the French speaking individual over someone else. And I think that's why a lot of people are looking towards the coach of Team Canada, the World Juniors, because, you know, he's a French-speaking guy, but he also has the merit. He's also a very good coach. You know, he has experience working with young, skilled players. He was on the Halifax Memorial Cup team in the QJMHL with Jonathan Drouin and Nathan MacKinnon. So there's that there. But it is definitely one thing where, you know, where anytime a position is available within the organization, instead of looking at, you know, hey, like, this guy's a good coach, or this guy's a good scout, or this guy's a good general manager, you know, you have to, you know, French speaking has to be one of the first boxes that have to be checked. And that definitely does, that definitely is a problem, because it limits, I guess, your freedom to add talent, to add, you know, a good vision and the best people to make your team the greatest team it can be. And, you know, and besides that, I think even though, you know, the French speaking thing is obviously, you know, I guess the more hot topic of what he said, I do think his point on how the Habs don't necessarily focus on development, I think that's probably key, because, you know, we all know like the one thing to make a Stanley Cup contender in this league is drafting and developing. You know, you can select all the players you want, but if you're not developing them, if you're not growing them in your system, if you're not putting them in a position to succeed, they're not going to do anything. And I think that's, you know, if you look at the Laval Rocket in the AHL, you know, they're struggling, and, you know, the last first-round picks that Habs have had in the past couple of years aren't really progressing in the way that a lot of fans want. Like, for example, I think Eric Engels from Sportsnet, he tweeted, I think yesterday, that Michael McCarron has, like, I think a goal and like 5 assists in his last like 13 games or something. And that's definitely not something that you'd want out of a first round pick. And I think he also said that that the team is growing him to be more of a checking forward, and not even necessarily a center, which is, that's, you know, that's another discussion for a different time. But I think just seeing all this go on and you know, and see the desire from the fan base for the team to retool and finish as low as possible and get a high draft pick, that's not going to matter if the organization isn't going to be committed to, you know, to growing them to be the best players they can be, instead of looking at more of a short-term focus where every year you have some level of success. Because, you know, there's this year where they're projected to go to finish low. Then there's that year where Carey Price went down for the whole season, and after they ended up drafting 9th overall. And then I think before even Bergeron was there, so because they drafted 3rd overall to get Alex Galchenyuk in 2012. So, you know, so there's years where they're finishing low to where they can draft these like high quality players, and they're not necessarily doing anything with them. Granted, you know, Sergachev is having success in Tampa Bay, that's a different story, but, you know, I think that and also the French business thing are two things that I don't necessarily know if they're going to change, but I do know that it's something that has to be looked at if Montreal maybe want to grow to become something better than they are now. Omar, speaking about the cultural requirements for the Montreal Canadiens, I would be remiss to not talk about the Marc Bergevin State of the Union half-season address and his comments about Jonathan Drouin. He somewhat, I mean, he did admit that Jonathan Drouin would be better fit on the wing. And then he backtracked a bit and said, well, he's the best thing we got at center.
Yeah.
what were your thoughts on Bergevin dropping that bomb on the fans and the media?
Yeah, at first, you know, sometimes when you see something and you have like a double take, it's different because I was listening to it or watching it rather, but like when he said it, I was like, wow, I can't believe he actually said it. And then I started laughing. I'm like, so because it was a running gag, I think, for the last like month or so, where some people were saying like, oh, you know, we're starting to see that Drouin is more suitable on the wing. They should move him to the wing, put Galchenyuk in center and stuff like that. But I guess just to, you know, based on what he was saying, to kind of hear that, like, you know, if I think what was it he said that if the team already had a bona fide number one center, that he'd ideally be on the wing. It's like, okay, so that kind of makes the whole Sergachev trade look a lot worse. Because I think what a lot of people were, I guess, hoping would satisfy them is that, you know, even though they lost a great player in Sergachev, they were filling a role in the organization that they desperately needed to fill in making Jonathan Drouin the center. So the fact that Mark Burfin said that, you know, ideally he'd be a winger, that's kind of like, okay, well, that kind of sucks. But I think another thing we have to remember, and I honestly, I forgot this too. I went back to one of Bergevin's old interviews, I think in the summer when they're at the golf tournament, and he did say the same thing. He said that, you know, he's not necessarily making this trade to make Jonathan Drouin a center. He said that even if they're going to play him on the wing, he'd still make the trade anyway. So I guess that kind of makes it a little bit better. But on the other end, it makes the hole that they have organizationally at center a lot worse than we thought before. But granted, this is his first year doing this. So I think a trade like this, which is obviously going to be compared for a long time, I think we're going to have to look for year two or year three to see if this is actually a failure or a success. But, you know, I definitely do think it's not necessarily a good look for Bergevin when he kind of admits that, you know, that the player that they have playing as their number one center may not really be a number one center.
Mm-hmm. He essentially didn't fill the number one center requirement and then created another hole with the lack of a left-handed puck-moving defenseman. It's mind-boggling. It's absolutely mind-boggling. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, and a lot of people wanted to say, like, oh, you know, well, you know, he traded from an area of a weakness to address a weakness, and that's obviously something you never want to do. You know, have to give a shout out to my good boy, my good friend. Well, not really my good friend. I don't know him. Peter Chiarelli in Edmonton, who you know, who traded a superstar winger in Taylor Hall to address defense, and the next year he's gonna have a press conference saying, "Oh, well, you know, the Edmonton Oilers are looking for wingers." Like, "Oh, are you now?" So yeah, I guess it just kind of comes to show that you never really know how a trade is going to work out or how it's going to play out. But well, what the Montreal Canadiens have to do, it's not going to be fixed in a single trade. You know, I think they really need to, you know, get as much picks, as much young players as they can. And it's probably going to start with whatever they're going to get from Max Pacioretty. I think it's almost like a guarantee that he's going to be moved in some capacity. I don't know if he's going to be moved at this trade deadline. It may be something that the team may want to look at in the summer. But, you know, for them to say that they want to get a younger player who can score like Pacioretty, like, no. If you're going to trade a Max Pacioretty, you have to try to get a young center in return. That's the only way, at least in my mind personally, that we can justify trading a Max Pacioretty. Because, you know, granted, he's having a pretty bad year offensively. We can't deny that. But, you know, but he does have the pedigree of being a top goal scorer in the league. And, you know, if you can get that young center that you can help build around, and then maybe you can start to place the players you already have in the organization in the right places to succeed, then you can start working with something. But, you know, if you're gonna keep placing, you know, players who should be in the bottom nine and in the top six or number five defenseman as top pairing defenseman, then it's only gonna show. Eventually, you know, the cookie's gonna crumble, things are gonna crack. Any cliche you want to throw, you don't want to throw at it. It's gonna happen. And I know Habs fans don't want to hear this, but I did a post not too long ago saying that the Montreal Canadiens are the old Leafs, and it's continuing to look like that. Where you have an organization that kind of looks a little delusional, that they're trying to sell false hope to the fan base, which they are doing. I'm sorry, Mark, they're not making the playoffs. They're not. And you're trading away areas where you should build around to address other areas, but then you're making more holes, and this is making everything more complicated. So, you know, I think everyone just needs to sit down, you know, have a nice, you know, tea gathering, coffee break, whatever, and just truly sit down and think, like, what can we do to make sure, one, that this doesn't happen again, and two, that we can build this thing the right way. and build an actual Stanley Cup contender, because that's what the goal is, right? And I don't know, like, the closest the Montreal Canadiens have gotten to winning the Stanley Cup was that 2013-2014 run where they got eliminated in the Eastern Conference Final, and since then there hasn't really been any clear signs that they'll ever get back there. So I guess we'll have to see.
Wow, I can't wait to tweet a quote from Omar White directed at Habs fan Kamal Rahman that the Montreal Canadiens are the old Leafs. That's the sweetest thing I've heard in a long time. Wow. I feel flushed for some reason. 2018 is off to a great start. Omar, it is such a pleasure to have you come and visit with us all the time. You know that. Give our listening audience a quick plug, if you will, about how they can find you on social media and what you're up to at Winning Habit.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you can find my personal account. I'm at OLW93. I tweet both Leafs, Habs. I'm a Leafs fan who covers both teams. I'm sorry if that shocked you. I've gotten a lot of messages actually about that, with people questioning my allegiances. And also, you can follow Winning Habit actually at the website, winninghabit.com, or you can follow the Twitter account at FS Winning Habit.
His name is Omar White, and he's a double agent. Check out all of his espionage online. Thanks for joining us on Habs Fan vs. Leafs Fan. Cheers.
No problem. Anytime.
So turning the page, Kamal, we've got to bring in another one of our great affiliates. As you know, Puck Pros joined us last year and provide us with some great insight and coverage for all of our fans. And of course, the man is here. Baltimore Dave Stevenson joins us. Dave, thanks for coming on the show.
Yep, thanks for having me, guys.
I'm wondering, from an American perspective, Dave, do you think that one of the reasons why Travis Dermott isn't in the lineup is because the Maple Leafs might be finally dealing from a position of strength and finding a way to upgrade their blue line, knowing how frustrating it's been of late?
I think it would be for that reason. If they were moving Dermott, I imagine it would be for somebody along the lines of Doty or, you know, that kind of caliber defenseman, because I know Toronto views him extremely highly.
So what is your take on the whole notion of the team making a move? Do you expect the Toronto Maple Leafs to make a trade at the deadline of any significance? And if so, what do you think it'll be?
I think the Maple Leafs will trade for a defenseman. I'm not sure what they're going to do, because there's not too much out there as far as the rentals. Like, they could maybe go for a guy like Mike Green, but I don't think he's precisely what they need. Maple Leafs are definitely going to be a very fun team to watch until the trade deadline, because there's a number of different directions they could go in, and they have the assets to pull off a big move. The question is, does the franchise feel like this is the time to do it?
Davey, with the Washington Capitals, taking a look at them, they've got a 27-13-3 record. They're on a 5-game winning streak, and yet again, here they are sitting first place in their division, fourth overall. But the question on everyone's lips is, does the regular season matter, knowing what sort of past postseason failures the Washington Capitals have had? What do you think will be different for the Washington Capitals heading into the playoffs?
I think this team has shown, like, they've overcome a little bit more of adversity. Like, they got off to a horrible start. Barry Trotz's job was reportedly on the line. They've rallied in. They've looked a lot better. And they're starting to trust their younger players a lot more, which I think is a good sign, because their young players absolutely deserve their trust.
Will we see a different Washington Capitals team in the playoffs, or do you think they're more built for the postseason, or will it be more of the same?
More of the same, but I hope I'm pleasantly surprised, because this team isn't as good as last year's team, or even 2 years ago. As I was thinking, they might be interested in Duclair just because he's not making much money and they can just cut ties with him after this year, but that wasn't something that they were willing to do.
Yeah, he was traded for not very much, so it's curious to where he ended up eventually in Chicago. So, yeah, I was surprised that Washington didn't go after a player like him.
Dave, you've got a fantastic article right now that's trending on Puck Pros, specifically looking at the All-Star snubs now that the selections were made. And there's some really shocking names that aren't on this year's team, including Bobrovsky, Tarasenko, and Phil Kessel. How do you reconcile the fact that someone like a Sidney Crosby gets asked by virtue of the fact that he's such a well-recognized name, while other lesser or maybe not nearly as high-profile players end up having to not have an opportunity to entertain the fans?
I kind of get Crosby, by the way. I mean, he's one of the league's top stars, and it's always best if he's there. But some of those decisions were really questionable. Like, having a guy like Chris Letang on the Metropolitan Division roster over somebody like Shane Gostisbehere, who would have been a perfect fit for 3-on-3 hockey, it's just baffling and frustrating. And it's a real darn shame that Tarasenko won't be at the All-Star game, because he's easily one of the most entertaining guys in the NHL, both on and off the ice.
No question about that. It's almost like the fans are being robbed of a delicacy that they should be enjoying at a time of year when the NHL claims to care about these young rising stars. Can you think of no better example than having a Tarasenko on display when you've gone ahead and paid all that great, you know, all those amounts of money or put in the time and effort invested to watch the event?
No, I can't. I mean, I think Brayden Schenn is certainly a very deserving player, but it's not hard to see who the best player on that dynamic first line is. It's Tarasenko. He makes that entire Blues first line that has done so many good things for them. He makes it go.
Unquestionably. His name is Baltimore Dave Stevenson. You can find his fine work at Puck Pros, at Puck_Pros on Twitter, and you can find his personal account at Baltimore Davey. Davey, thanks for dropping by and visiting with us again here on HBL.
Thanks for having me, guys.